everyone, and welcome to Minute 102 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is my good friend Duncan Shields from Chronologically Speaking. Hello, hello, Duncan.
Hey there. How's it going? Glad to be back.
Going great. We're gonna continue with this conversation that we started yesterday. This little dialogue from John Miller. And so minute 102 begins with Miller continuing his confession, and ends with Miller expressing his true feelings. So I mean, the way that we left things yesterday was that the men were starting to get very agitated. Mike was getting ready to shoot Ryben. The two of them are yelling back at one another. The others are all trying to figure out how they can try and stop this madness. And Miller just finds a simple way of doing it. He just starts talking to everybody,
Yeah.
And everyone's just shocked. They're looking around like, what the hell are you talking about? And he lets them know a little bit about his history, telling them that he's a school teacher. Telling him that he teaches English comprehension and that he's or composition, and he's also a baseball coach, and nobody really expects him to be this G.I. Joe that apparently he is. And when people hear that hear what he's done, it just doesn't make any sense to them in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And so this minute continues that whole conversation. And so I'm actually just going to read through the dialogue because it's just going to flow right through, and then we'll talk about different things there. And he goes, and so the last thing he was talking about yesterday was how he's going to, is his wife going to be able to recognize him whenever he gets back to her? And then so here he says, and how I'll ever be able to tell her about days like today. And first of all, I love that the way that he caps that by basically saying, today is just a completely chaotic day. And he could be talking about so many different things as to what he's talking about today. Is he talking about Wade? Yeah. Is he talking about the fight right now? Is he talking about having to make the decision of what he's going to do with Steamboat Willie? He has all these different opinions as to what it is that it could be that he's referring to by saying to tell her about today. Is he talking about something in general or something specific, or just the chaos of everything?
How do you encapsulate all of that? Because he's like, he gave orders that led to the death of the medic.
That's right.
And the medic was valuable.
That's
right. They got their objective. But like, even before going to the objective, when his men were like, let's not, I have an idea, let's not. And he's like, let's say we don't. Then the next group of GIs that comes along is going to get cut to ribbons by this machine gun nest. Like, this isn't about following orders. This isn't about our duty. This is about saving other soldiers' lives. This is, We have an obligation to do this really risky thing and take out this machine gun nest.
Right.
And the guys are like, yeah, but I don't want to. It's like, hey, that's got nothing to do with it. But I loved his authority in this movie because he's really authoritative, but without being, you listen to me, private, without being a loudspeaker and a hammer about it. He's as is evidenced in this pivotal scene, is he pours water on the fire instead of gasoline. He doesn't try to be the one that screams the loudest. He comes in obliquely and quietly and sort of confuses everybody into silence, which is a fantastic way to diffuse the situation, and maybe the only possible way, because if this way, I don't know, what do you think about this situation? Do you think he's just buying them a little time before another blow up happens, or do you think that he's effectively cemented himself as the leader permanently, you know?
No, he's definitely cemented. I think he's definitely cemented himself here. I mean, again, it goes back with, you know, we were talking about this yesterday a little bit about the fact that since he's a school teacher, these might be part of the tools that a teacher uses when dealing with a rowdy class or things like that.
You know, yeah, like, it's funny. I was talking about this last night because my wife's a school teacher. We had another person who was a school teacher over for dinner and their family, my cousin. And I was talking about this time when I was in grade 10 English. And the teacher I had, Mr. Miles, on our first day of school, he said, "I'll tell you how to get a class on your side. And I'll tell you how to be in charge of a classroom." Well, what happens, what you do is the first student that speaks out of line shows a little disrespect, shows a little jokiness, stands up. You pick that student up, no matter what his infraction was, how slight his infraction was or theirs was, get that student to stand and go up one side of them and down the other. Verbally dress them down and embarrass them in front of the class so hard that they cry. Just break their spirit, ruin them, and then kick them out of the class and send them to the office. And then after you do that, you'll have no trouble for the rest of the year.
I don't know. That sounds like, you know, the advice they give people when you first show up in prison.
Kill a guy in the showers and you'll have no trouble for the rest of your sentence or whatever. But, you know, and I think it's very similar rules. But then he said, I'm getting pretty old. And, you know, Jack, your older brother was in my class. You can attest to the fact that what I'm saying is true. And Jack was like, I came here pretty scared of you. And he's like, I don't want to do that anymore. And I'd rather not. So can we just skip to the part where, you know, you do what I tell you and we all have a good time in this class? And we were all like, yeah, sure. Sounds great. You know, and so there's this thing of like, has he been giving this speech for 20 years? Like, did he used to destroy a student in order to get peace, or is this the speech that he always gives, saying, this is what I was going to do, but I won't. But that's one way to maintain discipline, right? And and that was sort of the threat of something mean, but then the cushion of, I'm not going to do it. And with Tom Hanks here, he comes at it obliquely. One of the rules that I've often found is that if you have to tell the people you're in charge of that you're the boss, then you're not the boss, right? If you have to say, hey, I'm in charge here, then you're no longer in charge.
He doesn't need to do that here.
He doesn't do it here. He doesn't do it throughout the movie. He doesn't say, do it because I'm telling you to and I'm the boss. He's saying, this is why we have to do it. And quite frankly, you don't have a choice. You know, like, it's like, I'm not just making stuff up. Like, this is the and his, that whole conversation, he's like, gripes go up, they don't go down. Like, I'm not going to complain to you guys. I complain up. You complain to me, I complain up, and so on and so forth. That's the way it's always been. Like, you know, there are rules to being in charge. And Tom Hanks does a very good job of being in charge of these guys. He's human, but he's also like, you know, to them, he's also like a robot. He's competent. He orders people into the path of fire. He gets into the path of fire himself. You know, he's not cowering in the shadows while they go do the hard work. He's part of the team. But, you know, that's his right, rank.
Because a leader is meant to lead, not yeah. Stand in the back and sending people off to, you know, you need to also be there on the front, in the front. And
it's,
you know,
yeah, that, it's tough to, they say salute the rank, if not the soldier.
That's another Band of Brothers quote.
What's that?
That's another Band of Brothers quote.
Yeah.
You salute the rank, not the man.
Yeah. And it's very, I don't know. Oh, shoot, there was something else I was going to say, but I've forgotten it now. But the effectiveness of being a leader is a matter. Oh, that was it. If you try to ask a very effective leader how to be a leader, they'll say, just, tell the people what to do in a way that they'll do it.
Right.
And you're like, okay, I'm gonna need a little more than that. Like, what do you mean exactly? Like this, it's like asking a fish how wet water is or whatever. They're like, what's water? You don't, you
Certain
know,
things that can't be explained.
or being a good comedian. It's like, so how does one, be super funny? It's like, well, you say stuff to make a room full of people laugh. Okay, well, that's
Exactly.
it. That's all I got for you. Like I've been able to do this for my entire life. I don't know what to tell you. Like, keep trying until you find something that works, I guess. Like there's a natural talent for everything, and leadership is one of those things that people have, I think, a natural predisposition towards, and a lot of people don't.
Right. That's true. And I again, I mean, Tom Hanks does an amazing job in this in this movie showing showing his leadership qualities in this character. And whether his character has learned those qualities as a teacher or not, we will never know, because it's never really explained to us, but it's nice to make the conjecture that it is. That there that all of the years that he was a teacher helped are helping him to become a better officer, a better leader, of men. Because again, as you said, he's not yelling at them.
No.
He's speaking in a very I guess forceful or leader-like way that they want to follow his advice. Even when a few weeks ago we were talking, as we were just talking a few minutes ago, before they made the assault on the on the radar station, the men don't want to do it, but he still tells them, okay, we're doing this, and they fall in line in the end.
They fall in line and they like, we're afraid we're gonna have casualties taking this nest. And they do. That's part of what this whole fight is that's happening now is about. And what I really like about this minute is he doesn't say he's like he doesn't say buckle down and do what I'm telling you. He says, look, if you want to leave, leave. And I'll even do the paperwork. He's not
Okay,
saying,
well, right. That's
fine,
what we're about
go
to get to.
be AWOL. Right, just go and take your risks and do something super illegal and abandon your troops. He's saying, I'll do the paperwork. You want to go? I get it. You'll leave us in the lurch, but you'll be somewhere else. And I think the inference is there that like if you go to a different platoon,
Well,
this is
you've
gonna
jumped ahead a
act.
little bit. Jumped in, Duncan, you've jumped ahead a little bit.
Oh,
Let's
sorry.
go through the
Sorry, sorry,
dialogue and
sorry.
then
Go ahead.
we'll get
Sorry,
to
let's
the
keep
timing.
going down the
So then Miller says, Ryan, I don't know anything about Ryan. I don't care. That man means nothing to me. It's just a name. But if going to Rommel and finding him so he can go home, if that earns me the right to get back to my wife, well then that's my mission. And then he turns to Ryben and he basically says, you want to leave? You want to go off and fight the war? All right. I won't stop you. I'll even put in the paperwork. I just know that every man I kill, the further away from home I feel.
Yeah.
And so because I think he's sort of misinterpreting the idea of what Ryben is thinking here. Ryben is not saying I want to go off and fight the war. Ryben's like, okay, let's just move along. And that's it. He's because Robin was the first one to be very much against the assault on the radar station.
Yeah.
So it sounds as if Robin's the one. Robin's somewhat of a coward, in certain instances. When he needs to do something, I mean, come on, even the first time we meet him, he doesn't have his gun. Because
Right.
he his he says, where's your BIR? And he says, oh, the it's at the bottom of the channel. And then
Right.
they made him go get a new gun, that type of thing. And
Right, that was
but
him, right.
so that also shows a little bit of his cowardice even though he is a good soldier. You know, when he is following orders, he's good at what he does. But, you know, at this point, Miller is just thinking, okay, you don't want to be with us, then that's fine. But the argument isn't, you know, that I don't want to be with you. It's that, you know, you're endangering us. That's what he's looking at it. Because here, you're letting one of the enemy go, and this person can come back and ambush other soldiers, which again is the exact same excuse that Miller gave why they needed to have the assault on the radar station.
Yeah, it's a weird bit, because
it's ironic too.
It's ironic because the way things unfold, right?
It's ironic. No, it's ironic from the perspective that, you know, when they let Steamboat Willie go, he's the one who eventually kills Miller.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, had Miller killed Steamboat Willie like he should have, you know, Miller possibly would have made it out of the end of this movie. You know,
yeah, there's a real one thing. There's a couple things I really like about this movie, and one is showing how there's an aspect. Like, I'm not saying that your true colors come out in the wash under the pressure of combat, but an aspect of your character becomes very clear under the pressure of combat. You can think you're a very courageous person, but when the bullets start flying and you have to take cover, maybe you'll completely freeze.
That's right.
You'll be like, I didn't know that about myself.
That's right.
And you can brand yourself, you can brand yourself a coward if you want, but it's like a natural animalistic, I think, reaction to the bullets flying around you. It's just that it's no good in a battle, right? That reaction is not going to do anybody any favors if you're trying to win a war. So, you know, maybe branding it cowardice is a different, you know, I'm not entirely sure about that, but I will say, yeah, it's no good in a war. But you might not know that about yourself until you're in the situation, or you might surprise yourself. You know, like Tom Hanks, he's like, I'm a school teacher, so I went and got, you know, into this conflict, and look at this. I have a natural talent for not only leadership, but for getting objectives and memorizing things. And, you know, I'm a creature of study. I'm a creature of habit. I also know how to improvise. You know, like, he's on top of it because he's on top of being a teacher. And he's like, who'da thunk? You know?
That's right.
It's just as surprising to him as it is to everybody else, I think.
Correct. And I mean, I do like the way that Miller looks at the situation and says, look, I want to somehow get back to being myself. And the more people I end up killing is just going to take me further and further away from there. And I don't want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, so they're like, yeah, it's like you said, it's ironic because they're like, if we let this machine gun nest stand, it's going to kill more GIs. And so they let a guy go and he kills, like, and he kills more. He kills Miller. Like you said, like, what's going to happen to this guy? If you let somebody go and they get found by the German troops, they can't say, well, you know, they let me go, so guess what? I'm done with killing Americans. I'm done with killing allies. Cool, everybody? Is that cool? High five? You know, they showed me mercy, so I'm finished.
Whatever,
totally understand. You go home to your wife and kids, everything's cool. You know, like, of course not. You're going to get sucked back up into the machine and given new orders, and you have to do it. You know, and there's a whole thing about what everybody who, like, what was it? The most important thing in a war is to survive it. And that's it.
True.
That's it. You just have to survive it. And so if you, and then after the war is over, you need to survive any backlash or retribution that might happen, you know, because like there's all those people that those women that got their head shaved because they slept with a German officer or something like that. And they were branded as collaborators. And it was like, it was that or die. So I don't know how much of a collaborator they were, you know, but now they get the backlash of the other side of they survived the war. They did what they had to do to survive. And now they're being punished for doing what they had to do to survive. So it's a real tricky situation. if you can live through a war, that's the victory. You know, I think that's what was made. That the point of that was made in a few books that I read, and I feel like I can concur with that. But that's the two things they showed: Upham's cowardice in the face of battle, Upham's complete shutdown in the face of battle, because that's not something you see often in a movie.
Okay, and
he doesn't get punished for it, right? Like he has the cowardice. And it results in him probably feeling awful for the rest of his life. And we also have here, this is the problem with mercy in a war, is if you let a soldier live, the soldier's going to kill more of your team. So you're in the grip of something bigger than yourself. You have to kill the prisoner. Like, that was another really good bit that I liked in Band of Brothers, when they're walking past all those German prisoners. And this guy's like, hey, speak any English or something. And one of them's like, oh, yeah, I do.
I'm from Oregon.
Yeah, I'm from Oregon. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah, my parents were German immigrants. And so when the word went out, we came back here. And that's why I'm in the war. And the guy's like, I know people from Oregon.
No, he was from Oregon.
He's like, I'm from Oregon, too. They keep going, and then you hear machine gun fire in the background, and all those Germans have been killed, even though that one was just from Oregon. Like, I thought that was a really cool, I really liked that scene. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
It's true. All right, that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else you want to talk about in this minute?
Just Edward Burns, because he was kindest, like, was he a no-name at this point?
He was starting to make his own movies, but he was really just starting out.
Yeah, because he's known for She's the One.
That came after?
Okay, I thought he was like I thought he was the guy from Party of Five or something, because it's, I don't know, his face is really familiar, but I haven't seen a lot of his work. But I don't know.
He's a writer and director, right? I actually like some of the he's done a lot of indie films, and there's some of them that I love.
Awesome.
Purple Violet. There's another one called Looking for Kitty. These are very hard to find movies also, but they're great. They're small little stories. You know, I've always enjoyed his stuff. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Number five would probably be Saving Private Ryan. These are movies that, I quote now and again. I think of now and again that occur to me often. That's kind of my like definition. If a movie sticks with you and kind of becomes just a part of your DNA in a little way, you know, and Tom Hanks has done that for so many of us. So number five would be Saving Private Ryan. Number four would be Road to Perdition. Loved that movie. Number three would be Philadelphia. Number two would be Big, and number one would be Forrest Gump. That one really stuck with me.
All right, that is a great list.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It was cool in Road to Perdition because he was, he's playing a hitman, like ostensibly an evil person, right? You know, but he's still somehow like Tom Hanks.
Doesn't really do.
So, I love it.
That's actually one of the reasons why I didn't like Road to Perdition, because I didn't think he was effective enough as a villain.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But whatever, to each his own.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. It was a hard sell. I will definitely concur that it was a hard sell.
Yes. All right. So, Duncan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Duncan Shields?
Just Google "Buy Duncan Shields." Shields, and Google Chronologically Speaking and the Time Bandits Minute, and sit back and bask in the joy and pleasure of listening to deep dives on both of those movies with myself, my co-host Curtis Blaze on Time Bandits Minutes, and a cavalcade of illustrious and amazingly intelligent guests.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. You can send me an email to movieroundminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude, you haunt me with reveries of days gone by.